So in the last teaching, we were developing the understanding of the dialectic of the drives. And it was mentioned that the philosopher Hegel was the author of that concept. But it was a philosopher who came shortly after Hegel who represents the break between the classical modernity, if you will, versus the modernity that would lead to the postmodern, that is represented by the shift from Hegel to Nietzsche. And so tonight it's Nietzsche that I want to discuss with you, because he's one of the great geniuses of the Western philosophical tradition and analytic achievement of understanding of the inner labyrinth of consciousness, whose foresight as to what is happening now in the world is unparalleled by any other thinker. Hegel, we could say, was the last Christian thinker, at least nominally Christian. But for Hegel, for Nietzsche, Christianity was a monstrosity. It was a corruption and a perversion of the teachings of Christ. And so Nietzsche wanted to leave Christianity behind and return to Christ, to the real teachings of Yeshua. And he went very deeply into that understanding and into the relationship of Greece to Jerusalem, because it was through the filter of Greek and Roman culture that Christianity both suffered its perversion when it was taken over by the Roman Empire, that then used it in order to not only destroy all the other wisdom schools along the way, all the Greek schools, but later on, of course, with its Inquisition, to destroy all of the threats to the empire, and it was a tool of the empire to enslave the people, not an instrument for liberation as Christ's own teachings were. And if nothing else, Nietzsche was a great spiritual anarchist who wanted to return to freedom. But he also saw that freedom present in the Greek culture, at least among some of its philosophers, its great philosophers, and its great artists, its playwrights. And so his first book was a book on Greek philosophy, and it was actually the birth of tragedy through the spirit of music. Nietzsche was also a great musician. Many people don't realize that. He's an extraordinary composer. You can hear his music is online. Extraordinary compositions of great depth and power. And he recognized that the Greeks were very aware of the power of music. If you go back to Pythagoras, the whole universe is music. It is a spectrum, an octave of vibrational frequencies. And they were very much aware of how the different frequencies would affect the soul and invoke different drives within the human heart. So his first book was an analysis of how the art form of tragedy developed as a means of displaying for the people the inner journey of a soul through its own dark night in order to discover its own antithetical nature, its lower drives, and have to do battle with them in order to slay that which was inferior, to be able to be victorious and able to express the truth of our godly nature, of our partaking of the good, the one, the absolute, through manifesting one of the forms, the archetypes of that infinite consciousness in our lives, and becoming a manifestation, an avatar of that archetypal beauty and truth. And he recognized that it was this art form of tragedy itself that represented the soul's capacity to take the drives that were in conflict at the ego level and turn them into convergent drives that would produce the highest art, and that this was the flower of human culture, to produce an artwork that would perform and express the entire spectrum of the struggle within each soul to become liberated. And so he discovered that the mythology of Greece was a coded expression of the relationship of the different human drives, and that the two most important drives were those that were called Apollo and Dionysus. And Dionysus was that desire for freedom that would suffer the tragic resistance of a culture that wasn't able to bear its truth and its power and its breaking of the molds of conventional morality and belief systems, and would be martyred or would be in some way forced into the position of Prometheus, who by stealing the fire of the gods had to suffer having his liver eaten by the crow or whatever that bird of prey was that they sicked on him. So it was the convergence, the alliance of Apollo and Dionysus that the soul was able to achieve that created the possibility of producing a work of art that would resolve all of these internal conflicts and express their resolution for the community as a whole. Apollo represented the spirit of art, the structures of consciousness, the incredible discipline required to produce a play or a symphony or some other art form, and Dionysus, the freedom to bring the wildness of complete non-structured pouring out of creative intelligence and love into that artwork. And it was only when both of these drives were unified that great art could be produced. So it was Nietzsche, who, by the way, he was born in 1844, and his father was a Lutheran pastor. He grew up in a very Christian atmosphere. And like Ramana, he lost his father at a young age, even younger. He was only four. And this was one of the great searches for the name of the father, if you will, the word of the father. And so his love for Christ was very deep. Many people think of him as being anti-Christian, but only in the terms of the religion that perverted the teachings, not of Christ. And so he was very much involved in that, and then he integrated that with his love for Greek culture and philosophy, and he became the earliest chair of the Department of Philology at the University of Leipzig, and in which he was a teacher of Greek and Latin literature and philosophy. But then his own inner journey took him so deep he could no longer remain within the academic world. His writing broke through the traditional form that philosophy would take, and he was not interested in the kinds of pseudo-philosophy that are here nowadays, of logic and analytic philosophy and philosophy of science and all of that. He wanted to go to the depth of the meaning of human consciousness. And so in that, he left into a world of solitude in which he plummeted into the delirium of the depth of his subconscious, and he attained through his own inner struggle in the labyrinth the superconscious nature. And so his life was a beautiful process of following Ariadne's thread through the labyrinth to discover and slay the Minotaur. But he got wounded by the Minotaur along the way, as everyone does who actually engages in that battle. And he turned those wounds into philosophy and into music. Along the way, he became an ally of Wagner, who he thought also was bringing a musical renaissance to not only Germany, but to the world. But then he felt that Wagner also began to corrupt his vision, and he had to leave Wagner as well. And then he lost all his friends, and he was really in a very solitary and lonely state, and really no one understood him. But in his struggles, I think unwittingly rediscovered the insights of Taoism. You can see exact phrases almost that come from Zhuangzi and Lao Tzu in his writings. And in his final stage in the 1880s, he achieved Wu Wei, which was his ultimate goal, to have a consciousness that was totally free of intention, that was just a pure vehicle for the outpouring of truth. And then he reached a final level in which he went beyond language, and he realized he was done. He had graduated. He had realized the self. And in that moment, he knew that he had to leave behind philosophy and the whole world of symbolic truth to be saturated by the real. And because Germany had no ashrams at that time, the closest thing he could find was an insane asylum, which, as you know, is very similar to an ashram, if not identical. And so he found a very comfortable one, and in order to make sure they admitted him, he was reading a book by Dostoevsky. He was reading Crime and Punishment, and there was a scene in there where Raskolnikov, the hero, did something that got him busted, and he did the same act with trying to protect a horse that was being flogged by a driver, etc. Anyway, he went mad, quote unquote, and indeed they took him to this asylum, and he was very happy there. They had beautiful gardens, and he walked and he was in a meditative state. And the few friends he still had visited him, and they all came back and said very publicly, "He's feigning madness. He's not mad. He's totally lucid, but he's done with the symbolic level. He's Jivan Mukti." You know, they didn't use that word, but it was the equivalent of that. And they recognized this was divine madness. It was not psychosis. And he completed his journey. And so he's one of the great figures of the modern age, one of the few sages that we can look to, although he's totally misunderstood by most people, called a Nazi and anti-religious and all of that. But none of that is actually true. So, in any case, all of that is a prologue. to a preamble that I'll now begin, which is that it was another great modern French novelist and philosopher named Pierre Klossowski who went back into the life of Nietzsche and didn't focus on his philosophical writings, but on his letters that he wrote to a friend, to his friends, to the few people who hung with him through his inner journey, and he reconstructed the phases of his psychological and spiritual development that he revealed in these private letters to his friends, and he coordinated them with the developments in his philosophical writings. And so he analyzed, he did a kind of psychobiography of Nietzsche that analyzed not his philosophy, but the inner work that led to the capacity to produce that philosophy. But the philosophy itself, he recognized, was only a simulacrum of the truths that he discovered that were incommunicable because they were so rich, so polysemic, so multidimensional that they could not adequately ever be rendered into language or even into music. And so the writings of Nietzsche can't really be understood without knowing the inner struggles that he went through in order to be able to execute those works of art. And he wrote a book about Nietzsche, and that book by Pierre Klossowski, who, by the way, is one of the great novelists of our time, and who has, I think, extended the reach of the modern novel beyond what anyone else has done. And very few people know Klossowski's novels, but they're a great addition to human culture. In any case, Klossowski wrote this book, Nietzsche and the Vicious Circle, which was translated by Dan Smith. This book is a great book. If I had time, I would lead a book group on this book. And maybe we'll have time to do that. I don't know. But those of you who are philosophically inclined, this is one of the great gems of writing of the modern age and an analysis of Nietzsche that's priceless. But one of the points of Nietzsche that I think is largely overlooked is that he is the true discoverer of the unconscious, at least in the modern age. The Greeks knew about it and the mystics have always known, but he put it into philosophic and symbolic form of a kind that is actually what enabled Freud to create psychoanalysis. Freud read Nietzsche but never gave him credit. He stole a lot of his ideas and then he corrupted some of them. And this is why Gilles Deleuze, who was a total fan of Nietzsche, his second book was about Nietzsche, Deleuze wrote a book called Anti-Oedipus, because he felt that the Oedipus complex and Freud's focus on that was a complete perversion of the true understanding of the conflicts and the dialectic of the drives that actually goes on within the subconscious. And it is Nietzsche's understanding that is much closer to Sat Yoga. It's not the same as Sat Yoga for this reason. Nietzsche focused on the body. He didn't have a concept of the soul because he threw that out with Christianity. And he didn't have a concept of the Atman. So for that reason, he focused everything within the body and particularly the brain. He unfortunately was affected by Darwinism and all of that, because that was coming into the world at the time. And because he himself had many bodily symptoms, he suffered from migraines, he suffered from digestive problems, he suffered from all kinds of physical issues, all of which he discovered were psychosomatic. And in the course of his work, he was able to heal most of that. But he put the dialectic that he discovered within his own internal conflicts into a map of the unconscious, but it was really the subconscious that Freud then drew upon to develop his theory of the ego and the id in particular, and the superego, of course, and to that gave Freud his initial paradigm that then, as I say, became somewhat not only watered down but focused on the family drama level of the soul. And my theory is that Freud, because Freudianism became so hegemonic for a period of 20 or 30 years during the 20th century, that the Freudian belief system actually entered into the morphogenetic field and created the Oedipus complex that then the psychoanalysts discovered. Okay, so there was a feedback loop between the Freudian belief system, which everybody who was cool got psychoanalyzed, you know, at that time for many years. Everyone in the upper class was seeing an analyst, because it really was for the rich who had the leisure, you know, to go four times a week for, you know, 10, 20 years and talk and have somebody actually listen to them. You know, it's a very rare thing. And so they enjoyed that. But the focus on the Oedipus complex was a domestication of the psyche, as if we didn't have much larger boundaries and issues that ended up being suppressed by psychoanalysis itself through its very narrow focus on this one particular complex. Even Jung broke away from Freud for that very reason and returned to the archetypal dimension of consciousness. And Jung was a student also of Nietzsche and very much influenced by him, and did a long two-year seminar on Nietzsche that is published in two volumes. Very, very powerful book. I think maybe the most important of Jung's writings or speakings that were published. But in any case, Deleuze was one of those who again began the return of consciousness and of philosophy back to its roots in the Greek understanding of the drives via Nietzsche. And the man who translated Klosowski is also one of the leading experts on Deleuzian philosophy. In fact, this I'm a fan. I've been a fan of Dan Smith for many years. And this book, Essays on Deleuze, is like a Bible that I use for reference, because Deleuze, to me, is one of the most important thinkers who brought back the minor figures that were dropped by mainstream Western culture and became marginalized, like Kafka, for example, who is a great thinker, and of course Spinoza, Nietzsche himself, and Leibniz, of course, and others who in general are not well known or thought of. And he was able to integrate those into another very important vision. But in any case, all of that now is the preface to what I'm going to talk about tonight, which is the actual presentation by Dan Smith of his work in translating this book by Klosowski about Nietzsche. And there's a great deal to learn from his talk. It's very accurate, it's very precise and concise, but you will have to listen very closely. So I'm sure all of you will be totally one-pointedly concentrated on what he's saying, so that you can take in these very subtle concepts that I think are very useful in your own journey of discovering what which drives are battling within your soul at any given moment, and how to shift from a battleground to an integrative mode of resolving those conflicts and then augmenting the drives as they exponentially increase each other's power to enter into the upper death drive and bring you to liberation very rapidly. So that's the purpose of the talk tonight and of my showing you this video. And I'll stay for the discussion afterwards because you may have some questions. But I do think that it explains, he explains very clearly the journey of Nietzsche to attain the state of Wu Wei and his own self-realization. So I hope all of that is inspiring and useful in your own spiritual ascension. Namaste.